You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
As always on a Wednesday, we speak to an investment professional from Maison Optimal in Cape Town. And this week we're speaking to Armin Diemen. Armin, I suppose we ought to incorporate a review of the year in this chat. But let's have a look at what's happening in the overseas markets at the moment and link it to central banks, if you would, because I've been banging on for ages about the fact that this QE that no one wants to call QE is actually QE and is boosting the markets. And I don't know if it's as simple as that, but it's certainly a contributory factor.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, actually, Lindsay, because this morning Nedbank brought out a very nice chart that basically showed the linkage between central bank balance sheets and the MSCI World Index, and they're both on the same graph, and they really are in sync. Yeah. So when central bank balance sheets are expanding, the MSCI World Index starts going up and continues to go up. When the central bank's balance sheets start to shrink, the reverse happens. And it's an absolute, almost perfect fit. And really, that's what's happened. I mean, earnings haven't really grown that much over the last year. And the MSCI World's up strongly. I think the leading index is the NASDAQ, which is up 30%. The S&P, I think, 25%. Dow 20%. DAX 25%. And CAC also about 25%, even the Nikkei 16%. The one index that is lagging, and we've been having discussions about this, you know, internally at the company, is the MSCI Emerging Market Index, which is only up 9% for the year. And then obviously within that, South Africa's lagged even further because the rand's lost 3% to the dollar this year, and our index is up 6%, or the Swiss is up 3%. And so in dollar terms, roughly between 3% and 6%, depending which index you use from a JSE perspective. So the whole debate is whether this rally can continue into next year, firstly for developed markets, and then secondly, if it's going to happen, we believe that emerging markets will then, you know, become the leading index going into 2020, because there's been such a mass expansion in the multiples in the offshore developed markets that emerging markets have lagged tremendously. And we think it all plays into this value versus growth philosophy, and how growth has outperformed value for so long, so for so many years. And for the rally to continue effectively, you've got to see some growth come back into the world, which means that value stocks and value indexes like the emerging market indexes should start to perform better.
Armin, before you go on, I have to talk about what you said about the Nedbank graphs that correlate the activities of central banks with the performances of the stock markets. I think the point is here is vulnerability, the big V, because if they start to say to themselves, well, we don't need to do this anymore, then surely markets will say, well, you've just pulled the plug on us, so we haven't got the liquidity anymore to buy equities and buy risky assets, so everything falls in a heap. Surely that is a risk. I mean, it can't go on forever.
Yeah, I think at this stage, look, obviously the liquidity making up for the lack of actual growth in world trade, for example, in global growth, in, you know, Chinese growth, American growth to a less extent. So liquidity has driven the rally. Obviously, at the end of the day, I think, you know, earnings should matter to markets. And earnings growth will have to come through either, you know, next year or in 2021. So that's what the market's hoping this liquidity is going to do, is improve growth. And also, I think we've discussed this as well before, how, you know, a loosening of the fiscal purses around the world should also help. And with the election in the U.S., some of our data, we've already seen, you know, the Fed isn't going to be taking away the liquidity anytime soon. In fact, they're going to be adding, I think, 80 billion, 150 billion a month or something like that. So they've also indicated how they're wanting the inflation rate in the U.S. to get to 2% and above. They seem to want to drive inflation up there. So I think the adrenaline rush, as you've put it before, is there for a while. And so we can all, you know, hopefully join the party, including South Africa to some extent next year. But I really do think that the leading markets have run ahead of things, and you wouldn't be surprised to see at some stage, you know, a bit of a pullback of sorts. But at the end of the day, I think the liquidity is going to drive the markets into 2020. But the forecasts, if you take the median forecast from one of several of these houses that put these things out, nobody's looking for fireworks from, for example, S&P 500 next year. I think they're talking about a 5% return. So clearly, I mean, the returns have been front-loaded this year, and it's been one of the most, and I hate to use this again, but, you know, one of these sort of the most unloved bull markets of all time. Everybody's been expecting, a correction or a recession, and yet suddenly, particularly in the last 6 months, or 4 months even, how these markets have shot up. So
well, they've shot up because of exactly what you've just said, and that is because people have unloved, or rather not loved, the market that has been now in place for, well, in March, which is only just 3 or 4 months away. It will be an 11-year bull market. So people that have missed out on it are saying, gosh, I mean, how much longer can my investors take these statements that plop on their letterbox every 3 months? How much longer can they take this? We have to become a participant in this bull market. And that's when, of course, the capitulation comes in from the bears, not so much the bears, but the people that don't believe in the bull market, which are two distinct different camps. And eventually, buying dries up, then away we go, and we fall, and quite a big fall as well.
I think the point is there's still a lot of liquidity out there, and a lot of liquidity has been, if you actually look at retail flows and stuff like that globally, retail flows have gone into, they haven't been going into equity funds for very long, actually. It's been mainly the bond markets, fixed interest that's benefited up until, I think, the last few months that has changed. But So there's a lot of money on the sidelines looking for a home. And I think the low interest rate environment, as I indicated earlier in this chat, I think the low interest rate environment's here for quite a while still. So that pressure to find returns or get returns or find a home to put your money is going to be there for a while. It's not going to I don't think it's going to disappear until after the U.S. elections anyway. I can't see, apart from a minor pullback, I can't see anything that's going to, set this market back aggressively before then the policymakers are going to make sure that's one way or another, unless there's a complete black swan event, which nobody can predict anyway by the nature of calling it a black swan event.
What about musical chairs? Because eventually the music will stop, and it'll be a change of political dispensation, or it'll be a change of US Fed policy, or it'll be something stupid that someone stupid in power, and there are so many stupid people in power at the moment, says or does. Something will happen, and eventually the music will stop and everyone will scramble for the door. I'm just getting the feeling that the only reason the markets are going up is because the markets are going up, and because you've got the money to put into the markets that are going up. The share buybacks and the mergers that we've seen over the last few days, it's quite extraordinary. In fact, in the last 30 years since I've been in the markets, 35 years actually, I've never seen anything like it. It is extraordinary. It defies logic.
Like I said, at some stage, earnings will have to improve. I mean, the median forecast for earnings next year is earnings growth is only around about between 5% and 8%. So that's not massive growth. And so, if you're looking at a 5% return next year and your earnings growth is 5%, there's no re-rating of the market. I think the re-rating's happened. Earnings growth is going to most probably trickle through and support some uptick in the markets going forward. And that's why I think, like I said to you, I think the hope for emerging markets to come through. And, I mean, they're trading at a big discount to overall markets where they used to trade over the last 10 years. And I do know I've seen a whole lot of research that says if you look at specific sectors, then emerging markets aren't as cheap as they seem, because S&P 500 in particular has got a much bigger tech component, and tech trades at a far, far higher multiple because of the superior growth prospects. So I know there are nuances within the whole story again. And obviously a part of this as well that's important, particularly from an EM perspective, is the dollar. Will the dollar eventually kind of top out and weaken a bit going forward? Because that does help flows to emerging markets and commodity prices and liquidity as well for emerging markets. So I think those are the big picture things, but if you've got time, we can discuss a few things on the local side as well.
Yes, please. I mean, as I've said to two or three commentators in the last couple of days, the Monday and Tuesday outflows from the South African bond market was not disturbing, but certainly disappointing. And I think it was a result of the Reserve Bank's inactivity last week and also the November the 22nd S&P downgrade, or rather reaffirmation of no upgrade decision Friday night, I think it was, around about midnight. And suddenly the market decided, well, we've had a bit of a look at this over the weekend. Let's sell bonds. They didn't sell the Rand so much. They're starting to nibble away at it now. But that was the one thing that really disturbed me over the last few weeks, the biggest factor.
Well, I think one of the lucky things about South Africa is we have a very deep financial pool here. If you look at our pension funds, the PIC and the pension fund, that's the thing, it's over 4 trillion of funds available to invest in things like government bonds. And obviously, that's one of the things that has kept our ratings where they are for a while. At the end of the day, I mean, inflation is, fell to 3.7%. It's way below what the SARB has been predicting, by the way. And I think, really, they do need to
cut rates.
They need to kind of get in the new world, I think, because their projections have been way off pace for over a year now in terms of the inflation. And the reality is, when your economy is as dead as this economy is, there is no inflation coming through from anything except government or electricity increases, and with the currency not being particularly weak. I mean, we've lost 3% over a year to the dollar, so that's nothing. And the oil price staying, it is up 15% over the last year, but it's still at low levels. There is no, there's no inflationary pressures. And I think with the economy being so weak, there is a 6% real rate or on the repo rate, even and the long bond rate. There must be room to add some stimulus to this economy. And I'm not saying we can borrow ourselves out of trouble, but at the end of the day, the repo rate does set a hurdle rate for businesses to achieve a return on capital. And when your return on capital for no risk is so high, and it's such a real rate, you're not promoting businesses to borrow and grow. So I really think they need to sit hard and look at how they project things going forward. And they could definitely add a bit of growth to the economy, which isn't going to do any harm.
Their excuse, of course, is that they've got Moody's coming up in February. But how many more excuses and how many more hurdles in the future do you need to overcome in order to make
Moody's
a decision right now?
Moody's is going to do irrespective of
precisely.
The Reserve Bank.
It's out of your control.
Out of their control, and a 0.25% isn't going to change anything when it comes to the Rand, for example, which is their main concern. Because that's the way the inflation comes into the economy from offshore. 0.25% in interest rate isn't going to change the Rand dynamics much, I would say, but it is going to help growth at the margin here. So, I really think that's a very, very weak excuse. And at the end of the day, only reform policies can change the outlook of Moody's, not the Reserve Bank, nobody else. So, they must carry on with it.
Yeah, they must. They must carry on with it. 2019 has been a year of great promise at the beginning and just ultimate disappointment at the end when it comes to South Africa, not when it comes to the United States or America's stock markets, that is. But maybe this will turn around. I just can't see, going back to your point about emerging markets, I can't see that if something happens in the United States or in any other global market that means that global market indices, stock market indices come down, that everyone's going to say, oh, well, because they're coming down, and we have to go to emerging markets, of which South Africa is one. I cannot see that happening. I think we'll get clattered even more, maybe 10-20%
absolutely.
More.
I mean, if the US market capitulates or comes off 10%, emerging markets are not going to do well, in particular South Africa. But what I'm saying is if the base case scenario is that the S&P does 5% for the year, and interest rates are staying low and there is reasonable global growth without a major uptick or downtick, then people are going to look for cheaper assets. It's the kind of the value orientation that I'm talking about, value as opposed to growth. And clearly emerging market assets are cheaper and some of that money is going to come towards those assets. So that's the thesis anyway.
Yeah. Let's have a look at overseas markets apart from the United States now and look at the Brexit story, because I noticed that the pound is incredibly strong against the rand at the moment. And I think it's to do with that disastrous interview that Jeremy Corbyn was subjected to last night on the BBC, I think it was, but also a couple of other things. There's all sorts of things going on in the UK which affect South Africa, because we are big trading partners with the United Kingdom. What is your attitude towards asset allocation towards UK stocks?
From a South African, from UK shares listed on the SA market, like dual listed shares, you mean?
Yes, and also in other parts of your business, the might on optimal view.
Yeah, look, I think firstly on Brexit, I mean, what a long slog, and we still haven't got anywhere. What it does seem like, though, is that a hard Brexit is, you know, not really going to be on the table either way, however this really pans out, I think. I think that's pretty much the story. I mean, you could argue that even Boris Johnson's exit or Brexit is not a hard Brexit. Kind of that's good for UK growth generally and UK assets, hence the pound. From a SA investor's perspective on assets in the UK, I mean, yeah, I think clearly, if the UK is going to do better, you want to own those assets. What assets do you want to own there? Well, that's debatable as well. You know, we still like the mining story, Billiton and Anglo's. I mean, we've discussed this before. We think that with the uptick in global growth and valuations of these companies and free cash flow, there's room for some capital appreciation in these shares. Specifically, you know, UK listed companies that one can access from here. Not that wild about the property stocks for a whole lot of other reasons. I mean, they're well documented. I know they are trading in big discounts and net asset values and that. But I think the move of High Street in the UK has really changed the property landscape there for forever. It's a structural change. It's not a cyclical change. So not necessarily jumping into those. But overall, I think, domestic stocks in the UK, I know, are trading at I'm talking about sort of FTSE 250 stocks. They're trading at very appealing valuations, much like our sort of mid-cap stocks, yeah. So I guess, that would be an area that one could find of interest if you're a stock picker. It's not really what we do in that space, but I would guess there are opportunities there.
This time last year, most people were saying, well, 2019 is going to be the breakthrough year for South Africa. And 2020, unfortunately, is saying the same thing because of the disappointment of 2019. What is your anticipation of 2020 and what are you saying to clients?
Well, there's there's almost no bulls left in South Africa. And then to argue a massive bull story, I think, is not the base case for anybody at this stage. There seem to be some incremental improvements in making some headway towards, crackdown on corruption and prosecutions and sorting out the SAEs. I mean, I think there is some headway being made, but it's just extremely slow. And no real momentum behind it. So, really, I think South Africa seems to be, for the next year anyway, the forecast for GDP and that really spell it out, like a bumble along kind of 1% GDP growth, but with some improvement in the underlying factors, behind that. But we definitely, in my book's going to get a downgrade. We've debated this as well, how much is in the price of our assets. And it could be argued that a lot of it's in the price in our assets, with people taking money out of the bond markets of late and out of the equity market for the last few years. And, the property market's pretty deflated and bond yields are very high nominally and in real terms. So you could argue a lot of it's the market's kind of discounted this. I think you will get a bit of a sell-off in the assets linked to this. How much? I'm not quite sure, actually. I think it's almost do you buy on the fact and sell on the rumor? Maybe it'll be one of those.
What worries me most about the last few days is, apart from the local short-term issues of bond sell-offs from foreigners, is the, and you may disagree with me here, is the M&A activity, because the M&A activity has been very, very pronounced. And I'm just seeing something now that's just come across the screen. It's an FT exclusive, it says here, Financial Times exclusive. Yeah. Manchester City stake sale breaks valuation record for a sports group. The Silver Lake Group from the Middle East, apparently a group of Middle Eastern investors, the deal puts the worth of the English champion's parent at $4.8 billion. Now, it's owned by a Dubai-based organization or family. So a football team that was in the third division maybe, I think, 10, 11 years ago, has suddenly become worth $4.8 billion. And it just seems to me that people are chasing things, the glitter, and things that look, as they say, sexy. So you've got Tiffany's being bought for $16.4 billion. You've got now Manchester City, the group that owns Manchester City, worth $4.8 billion. There's so much money, they don't know what to do with it.
Well, yeah, gee, completely. I think the Tiffany deal actually makes a lot of sense for LVMH, in terms of that they were underrepresented in the jewelry category, and they're also underrepresented in Americas in terms of their penetration or sales. So from that perspective, I think it makes sense for LVMH. In terms of Manchester City, well, you know, isn't that a trophy purchase really for people, as opposed to really a business deal, a bit like art? You know, I mean, how much is a Mona Lisa worth, or the Irma Stern, or whatever art you put on? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
What I do know though is that, being a bit of a football supporter myself, is that you know, English Premier League is definitely the most exciting league in the world. With the best teams in the world and the best players and the marketing and everything that goes behind it. So, you know, I think they're actually doing a very good job in terms of making an exciting product, if I can put it that way. How much is Manchester City actually worth where it is today? I actually don't know the numbers behind the club, so I don't want to venture an opinion on that. But I do think that sports/leisure activities, all, you know, a bit like Internet or Google, or, you know, these things have a worth that with more and more people in the world and more people with having spare time, as opposed to just, you know, the old industrial revolution, sitting in front of the machine for 20 hours and then going home, you know. People are working less hours and spending more time looking for things to do, and certainly sport and leisure is top of the pops when it comes to what you're going to do with your free time. So in general terms, I think it's a kind of industry that one could get involved in. What the actual worth is of Manchester City, I've got no idea. Maybe you know better, because I know you're a big football supporter as well.
I don't know. All I know is that they've got a great team and they're great fun to watch. And I would say that, yes, the Premier League in the UK, or rather in Britain, is the most exciting league in the world. But when you say they've got the best teams, no, they don't. They don't have the best teams. The Italians and more importantly, the Spanish have the best teams in the world. It's just the infrastructure doesn't make it as marketable as the UK Premier League, because the English like to go down to the pub on a Saturday and watch television. So that's that. But anyway, are you confident about 2020?
From a global perspective, or South Africa, or both?
I think South Africa to start with, if you would.
Yeah, I think you know what, I mean, the big, you know, and I wish we'd kind of get this thing over with, to be honest with you, this downgrade, because frankly, I think it's just, you know, it's waiting for it to happen. And so once it's out of the way, all the dust can settle. Yes, obviously it's not a good thing in terms of what it actually means. It means that your creditworthiness is worse and your ability to pay your debts is worse. So I think going forward, you know, 3 years' time, something like that, when if the numbers continue to deteriorate, which is what we envisage going forward, clearly that's going to be a problem. But I think from a sentiment perspective and a market perspective, really, I'm talking more about that in the short term, I'd rather get it over with and let the dust settle and carry on from there from a market perspective. From an economic perspective, I think, like I said, I think, you know, kind of bumble along 1% sort of growth, hopefully Ramaphosa and his crew continue to do more of the good things and less of the bad things in the year going forward. It seems like that's the course we're on. It's just excruciatingly slow progress. I think that's a major complaint everybody's got. And from a JSE perspective, yeah, I think we've discussed the valuations. They're certainly there. So if there's any pickup in activity or growth, certainly the companies have cut expenses and top line growth should come through. But I don't think anybody's expecting real fireworks. But positive returns, inflation beating returns for the year would be my forecast.
And overseas?
Overseas, like I said to you, I think from my perspective anyway, I think the developed markets have had a very good trot. There's not many years I can remember 30% returns for the major markets, around about that sort of number, give or take a few percent. And I think a lot of the good news is, from my perspective, is in those prices. I still think there might be some upside in 2020, just primarily because of the central bank support from the US and the ECB and the Japan and of the world and other emerging market banks that are still cutting interest rates. I think liquidity is there. Unless there's a major upset in the US presidential election, which is negative for markets like Elizabeth Warren, which clearly I think would be a big shock for the markets.
Yeah.
Unless that happens, I think I think a bit of progress on the international front, but I do think that it's time for value to do a bit better than growth. How much better? I'm not sure. And I don't think 2020 is going to deliver the returns we've had this year for the developed markets. I just can't see it.
Armin, thank you so much for your analysis. Thanks for your contributions throughout 2019, and I look forward to more of them in 2020. That's Armin Deem from Might on Optimal in the Western Cape. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox.